It is my pleasure, really, to welcome you to, this is now the fifth annual conference, Focus on Teaching and Technology Conference, and we've made it regional this year, so we want to thank all the folks who've co-sponsored it from St. Louis University and other places, as well as our corporate sponsors for the lunch. We're really pleased to have St. Louis U here. Some of you may have been asking yourself, why do I have a lanyard from the New York Times around my neck? Or some of you haven't even noticed, but the lanyard is from the New York Times. The reason is that UMSL is a participant in the American Democracy Project, which is jointly sponsored by the American Association of State Colleges and Universities, ASCU, and the New York Times. And so we have gotten, Peggy has gotten from the New York Times lanyards and a number of other things, which we have, so you can thank them for these, which are highly useful. The Planning Committee, by the way, the people who don't have lanyards from the New York Times, a lot of them are from the Planning Committee, and they have lanyards that are sort of orange and yellow to distinguish them so that you can tell who they are in case you have questions. Of course, now that the conference is almost over, they probably ducked those questions pretty well. But when you look at the conference program, which I assume you've been doing for the last day and a half, you'll notice that we have 8 campuses in the Midwest, including 2 of our sister campuses, Columbia and Rolla, represented on the program. 13 campus colleagues from 13 campuses have registered to attend, so we really want to welcome everybody, making this a regional event. We think we have a record-breaking attendance today of about 250 people, or not necessarily today, but over the 2 days, 250 people. And I think we have a record-breaking lunch, for sure, based on the last several conferences. So we're glad that you're all here. And I'm glad to join Peggy and everyone in welcoming you again back to the conference. I hope it's been productive. And I hope that you are acquiring new ideas, meeting new people, getting energized to do new things that relate to teaching and technology. And thinking ahead, next year there will be another conference. If you have ideas for the conference program, we hope that you will respond when you get an email message about the conference survey. We also encourage you to evaluate the conference. Remember that we're into assessment and making sure that we're meeting our learning outcomes. So we'd like to know that we're meeting the learning outcomes for the conference, if you can remember to do that. I'd like to especially commend Peggy Cohen and Jim Tom and Cheryl Bielema and all the other colleagues on the Planning Committee. They have done a wonderful job, and we're really, really pleased to have them have done this for us. Please let them know if you do have ideas for next year. Electronically is a good way to let them know. You can be an old person and email them, as we learned yesterday, or you can send them other kinds of messages on a blog or through the air in some fashion. Figure that out. The conference planning was really helped by a lot of people, including people from the Center for Teaching and Learning here and St. Louis University's Reinhardt Center, so we're very pleased. And it's my job now to introduce to you again our keynote speaker, Dr. Curtis J. Bonk. Some of you were here yesterday afternoon and heard Kurt Bonk's introduction, but I'm just going to summarize it again for those of you who missed it yesterday. He received his master's and PhD degrees in educational psychology from the University of Wisconsin. He's now professor of instructional systems technology and an adjunct faculty member in the School of Informatics at Indiana University at Bloomington. He's a founding member of the Center for Research on Learning and Technology at IU and a senior research fellow with the Advanced Distributed Learning Lab within the Department of Defense. And I have to tell you, yesterday, as we were listening to this introduction, the chancellor whispered to me, boy, that's really impressive. I've worked with those people from the Advanced Learning Lab, and, you know, what an impressive place for him to be. And he's received the CyberStar Award from the Indiana Information Technology Association and the Most Outstanding Achievement Award from the U.S. Distance Learning Association, the Most Innovative Teaching in a Distance Education Program Award from the state of Indiana. He's presented over 175 talks around the globe related to online teaching and learning. He has more than 100 publications on topics related to online learning pedagogy, massive multiplayer online gaming, collaborative strategies, and synchronous and asynchronous computer conferencing. His recent book is about blended learning that he just handed out, Handbook of Blended Learning Environments, Global Perspectives, Local Designs, which was published in December 2005. As you can see from the screen, his presentation this afternoon is titled From R2-D2 to the Matrix, A Galaxy of Online Learning Style, Motivational, and Learning-Centered Examples. You have the handouts for this, the PowerPoint slides, in your conference folder. I do want to make an observation that I think Kurt Bonk is a movie buff, but it's just a guess. Anyway, it's my pleasure to welcome him and have you join me in thanking and welcoming Kurt Bonk.
Of course, I unplugged my audio so no one would hear that. So we'll try this again.
With two, there are a master and an apprentice.
Okay. Now, I'm going to need some help to get started here in this afternoon. And Glenn didn't walk too far away. I'm going to just frame this a little bit. And maybe unframe myself. Frame this talk a little bit. Roll this down. Can you hear me in the back okay?
Unplug that mic.
Oh, we have to turn this one off, eh?
Ah, thank you.
Oh, that's better, eh? Get my Canadian accent. We're going to just briefly go through some more emerging technologies. We talked about them yesterday. I mentioned today I'll go through pedagogy. And there's really a storm that's hitting us in rapid fire, and I call it the perfect e-storm, emerging technologies, and there are dozens and dozens of them. We also have escalating or enormous learner demand, which really, in terms of bellwether years, 1999 was the key year in most places for online learning and blended learning. And of course, we've got the other E being the race budgets, which Missouri knows all too well, with their K-12 budget going from $15 million in 2003 to $7 million in 2004 to zero in 2005. And those of you working in schools in educational technology face similar things that we had to in Indiana, where our teachers had $100,000 of money to integrate technology that was just wiped clean. So race budgets were a problem the past few years. Now we see things changing a bit. And of course, the fourth storm, enhanced teaching, being the most important of the four storms, right? So we've got these four storms hitting us simultaneously, you know, like the storms coming from the south and hitting Florida over and over and over, and New Orleans over and over and over again. Here we are in the Midwest, maybe best represented by this unsettled zone in Missouri, maybe here around St. Louis. We're a little bit on the warm side of the front. We're not flaming zealots. We still want to critically evaluate what works in education, what is effective. And we'll go through a number of pedagogical approaches, perhaps 60 or 70 during the next 45 minutes or so, and give you a chance to think about three or four you can use. So we'll go through the perfect e-storm here for a second. The women who like George Clooney will maybe like this part. Okay, he says we only get one chance at this, and then what? And then we pray. I remember in the 1980s, we were dealing with artificial intelligence software, AI software, and I took all the money my parents had invested in my life insurance and invested in AI companies that soon were found to have unethical practices, and there went all my graduate school monies. People overhyped and underdelivered in terms of AI back in the 80s, and some of you may be old enough to remember that. Now in the 2000s, we've got people hyping e-learning and blended learning. We really need to see what works. We're in the show-me state. We should be looking at, okay, show me what works. So hopefully we can go through some techniques that do, in fact, work and that you can, in fact, use in your classrooms so we don't oversell and underdeliver. I'd like to get Glenn back up here, if she could help me out. She could put this raincoat on, because it is a perfect storm here. And if I could get Angela, who volunteered earlier, come on up from Rolla, Angela. I think you're going to help me out. I think, I know I need... Do we have someone from, is it the Leinart Center?
Reinhardt
Center. Do we have someone from the Reinhardt Center who can help us out?
No.
Okay. I can get, so great. Mary's here. All right. Do we have anyone from Columbia here who can help us out? Ta. Okay, Ta. Sorry, I'm out of St. Louis ones here, but I'll give you a dino from Calgary. And I went to Wisconsin, so I'm going to have to turn off my microphone here. There we go. Got some red anyhow. All right, get your umbrellas open here. Okay. Okay. Online learning here in Missouri. What's happening in terms of emerging technologies in your campus in Rolla, in Columbia, in St. Louis, and other places? What kind of technologies are being used? Clicker technologies in Rolla. Clicker technologies, great.
Well, we have Clicker too.
It clicks right in his head. Okay, Glenn.
We have wikis and blogs, at least.
Wikis and
blogs. And
podcast, wikis, and blogs. Oh, my. Okay.
We have blogs and WebCT.
Blogs and WebCT. Right.
Blackboard.
Blackboard. Blackboard. Blackboard.
Blackboard.
We have Sockeye, and we have SharePoint.
And SharePoint for online collaboration. And you're part of Sakai.
We have SharePoint. We have
SharePoint. SharePoint as well. Lots of technologies here. Any other ones? PowerPoint and Padica. Oh, we're done. Now we're rolling now. Okay.
Centra.
Centra for synchronous collaboration.
Podcast.
Wow.
Synchronous
chats. All sorts of things. How about pedagogy? Anything interesting happening on your campus with teaching? Not a thing. Quiet now. Technologies they can name, but pedagogy.
Collaborative groups.
Big from Rolla. Okay.
We have a lot of study groups.
We have, right. Okay. Learning communities from Rolla. Okay.
We have collaborative teaching in, we have a math technology lab using computers.
Uh-huh.
And we have collaborative teaching in English online.
Computers, English, language ed.
Service learning
with technology. Keeping track of mentors and all that, right.
We have web communication that promote all the website on campus.
Oh, so sharing what's going on in a website, okay.
We have the zone that is the new learning environment that students can use. Hands-on experience with the experts.
Hands-on with experts, right. Assessment.
We have a student success center which uses both online and face-to-face technology to help students learn.
Great. So success stories. How about demand? Where's the demand coming from for e-learning and blended learning on your campuses? What disciplines, specific disciplines or courses or what type of students?
Well, nursing is one.
Nursing is the first one always. How many nursing people we have here in the audience? They're the first ones jumping in.
The nurses are having a special conference today, and so we have very few nurses here from our campus, but they are, in fact, using a lot of online and blended learning.
They are, on our campus, too. Right. Anywhere else?
I need help. No. After that, we have a lot of majors that use CISL, our department.
School of Information Sciences.
School of Information Sciences.
Our entire chemistry.
Chemistry. Clickers with chemistry. Okay. Chemistry, chemists for clickers, I guess they call it.
We have clickers. We also have, just forgot what I was going to say.
Foreign languages?
Oh, foreign languages. We're using a lot of technology in foreign language learning and expanding that a great deal.
Okay. Anywhere else? Theology department. Right.
Our language department sent out the iPod.
Right. Yeah, language departments would need iPods. Okay. How many others of you in the audience? Any more demand coming from your kinds of programs? MBAs online, engineering, what?
Online
MBA, yeah, so we're studying too at Indiana. Happy to share with you our findings, in fact, if you want to know. Yeah. For science education, all the probing technologies. Yes, thanks, Linda.
Psychology, there's a big call. We have online courses and there's a call for more.
In psych, there's a lot of free online experiments in psych that you can get access to, in simulations, Gestalt experiments, Piagetian experiments, all that. Yeah, good points. What about budgets? What about budgets? Now everyone looks around. Now, have they gotten better over the past couple of years?
We're expecting them to get better for next year.
Okay. That's what we always say. Well, I want to thank everybody here for helping out. And chocolate, so which would you like? Be sure. Okay, chocolate. Okay, take
that.
You get the bravery award.
How's that? Okay, technology. I'm briefly going to mention a couple of technologies, and I'll turn my mic back on now. One of the technologies impacting us is OpenCourseWare. The fact that courses are freely available from MIT, from many universities around the world, Yale and National University of Vietnam was the second one putting their courses up for free, so it's not just the tier one institutions out there. We also have open source software from Moodle and Sakai. Many kinds of the virtual understanding environment I showed earlier, visual understanding environment for concept mapping online, free tools, free software that we can use. You can see the growth of Moodle. In 2003, the Moodle man, Martin Dogmias, came to see me in Duke's place in Hawaii. I happened to be there for a conference. He was there. He says, I've just put Moodle up. It was June of 2003. You can see the growth that it's had or experienced over the past few years. Quite a large growth within the Moodle community. A lot of people are using it. You can see a cat's using it, a smiley face, a dog, all sorts of people are using. Over 100,000 users of Moodle. I've just downloaded. I've used Blackboard, WebCT, OnCourse, you name it, I've used it. I'm going to start trying out Moodle as well. It's a free tool you can download. Sakai is another one that we're developing in Indiana. You can download and actually change it and sell it. So OpenCourseWare, open source software. There's a lot of universities around the world sharing their courses online. Notre Dame was the most recent one to jump in and put their courses up on the internet. This is an example of a website where they're sharing syllabus, they're sharing lecture notes, they're sharing content all around the world. They don't have anyone grading you taking the exams, but the content is there and made available for you. There actually is an open source, open courseware consortium and a group to share open courseware. There's conferences on sharing. Conferences on open source software that are coming out. This is one of 10 flatteners that I see of flatten the world of learning. In fact, we might say that in the old days, this would be known as being a pirate, right? Out there pirating software. Today, it's taken for granted. We're all sharing. We're sharing knowledge with one another. And that's what I'm trying to do here today, is share a little bit with you.
You know, for having such a bleak outlook on pirates, you're well on your way to becoming one.
We used to all be pirates. Now it's looked at as a good thing to share. When I went to Australia 4 years ago, they would say, oh, we don't share here. Went to the UK, we don't share here. But if you go to Merlot, there are 14,000 learning objects shared. There are 33,000 people sharing. We don't need millions and millions and millions of people sharing. We just need a few thousand good pieces that have been shared anyhow. We have a number of websites out there. In the UK, they have a website called Jurum for online knowledge sharing and learning objects. In Canada, they have Cario. In the US, we have Merlot and Connections, all sharing learning through technology. Moodle.
Holy cow!
I was in the Midwest. I threw this in there. That's Martin Dogmias. I just threw that in there. Just accessible technologies, mobile technologies. We've got Nicholas Necroponte making software available making hardware available, $99 laptops, for instance, for us. So he's trying to get kids in Africa to have access to technology, kids in India and other places that normally wouldn't, by building the $100 laptop and making it available through hand crank generators and so forth. We now have the Virtual University of Africa, or African Virtual University, which is getting MIT courses, Melbourne Institute of Technology, and University of Athabasca courses at discounted prices for kids in Africa to learn, which is the country with the average age, the lowest age of any continent, any continent across the world. Growth of online learning has been happening in higher ed since 1999, in K-12 schools since 2003. In 2003, this country had 300,000 people learning online. In 2004, it was 600,000 K-12 students. Last year, it was 1 million students. K-12 is growing very fast, and if you have an interest, go to the North American Council of Online Learning, NACOL, and they have indexed all the K-12 schools that are doing online learning. You now see Michigan offering free courses online to Michigan students. Michigan's the first state to mandate all K-12 kids have to take one class online to graduate. Now imagine when these kids, when Missouri requires that, when Indiana requires that, and these kids come to your campus having taken an online class, so they're not unfamiliar. They can't use that excuse anymore that they've never had an online class, which they often might use. So look at the growth rate of the Florida Virtual School. This is a half-credit course. It's list 60-some thousand, but you really have to divide that in half. They have 30,000 students at the Florida Virtual School. Utah, they have 50,000 students learning online in K-12 education. Missouri just chartered their schools this past week, signed the bill to get charter schools happening here. It's not just for homeschoolers anymore. It's being mandated in the state of Michigan. And higher ed, I had a whole bunch of numbers I could throw up. Again, this talk is not about technology nor about enrollments. This talks about pedagogy, but I wanted to briefly show you that it's important because people are enrolling in classes online. I was at the Open U of Israel in February and March. You can see some of the growth of their students learning online. I had the Open U of Malaysia up this morning in the blended talk, which has gone from 800 students in 2001 to 45,000 students today in Malaysia. It's growing around the world. Now let's go to pedagogy. You've got your handout there, and in your handout, the first one says solid and fuzzy. You also have your slide handouts. If you could write in under solids and fuzzies, solid ideas, those things that you really understood, and fuzzy things, those things that you don't. That's one way you can approach. The second way, you could circle the items that you can use. Put a check mark down the things that you might be able to use. Circle the ones you definitely can use. Check marks by the things you maybe, and a cross off by things you can't use. There are ways to think about all these strategies. You can think about them on a continuum, from low risk to high risk, from time, low time to high time, from cost, low cost to high cost, and from high instructor-centered to teacher-centered to student-centered. Which of these strategies are low risk, low cost, low time? Which are high risk, high cost, high time? Many people will say, I can only use things that don't cost a lot of money or that don't take a lot of time. So I've tried to index some of these strategies from the standpoint of time, risk, and cost. Okay? You can also think about them from a student-centered point of view. Now, we don't want boring e-learning, so hopefully you'll pick the ones that not only are less risky, but also ones that are interesting and engaging. So let's start. Before I get into these, just let me point out that they're backed up by the learner-centered principles from the American Psych Association. I don't have time to go through all 14 learner-centered principles from APA, but I have an article where I do that. And I'm happy to share that with you. In that article, we talk about how to create a psychologically safe environment, how to provide feedback and choice for students, how to apprentice their learning, and we link each of the learner-centered principles to those strategies. And so if you're interested in that, I'm happy to share that with you. I also have an article where I link in online learning ideas to constructivistic ideas and social constructivist ideas. How to build in chances for students to gather raw data, analyze raw data, share that data, collaborate on that data, elaborate, and pose contradictions. So there are, I have a chapter, it's free off of my website. If you go to publicationshare.com, you can get that chapter that looks at the constructivistic aspects and learner-centered aspects of online environments. I'm going to skip the next slide and go to some of these strategies. And this morning I talked about anchored instruction, where you show a video clip in your class and you reuse that video clip over and over for discussions. You can get something off of CNN at night. In fact, CNN indexes their videos. Anchored instruction is when you take something that happens in your classroom and reuse it. In this case, video content. You can have students watch an online video and have online discussions wrapped around it. You can show a movie clip in class, have students bring in movie clips to class that explain concepts that you're studying for that week, and then come back to it. I teach a lot of people how to teach, so we bring in movies on teaching, and we show them. But using movies is one way to anchor their learning. John Bransford developed this at Vanderbilt, and he had people look at Raiders of the Lost Ark to teach physics and math principles by looking at how many Indiana Joneses the pit wide, and could he have replaced the gold statue with a bag of sand and all sorts of things. Then he hired real-world actors to do some math-related story problems, and they create a whole series of goal-based learning scenarios that anchored students' learning, created what they called a macro context that could come back to within the video. Another idea is to have a minute paper. Some faculty in Indiana who teach business have their students do one-minute emails to them about what was effective in their lecture. It's a good way to use technology for formative assessment. One-minute papers, reflection papers go a long way not only for understanding your class, but having students reorganize their thinking. We studied business management at Waynesburg College in Pennsylvania a long time ago. I don't know if I'm saying that right. So long ago. And we looked at students doing reflective writing and minute papers and how it enhanced their cognitive structures. I don't recommend this strategy every week after our lecture because you get overwhelmed with emails, but maybe once a month or twice during the semester, it's a good technique. Low cost, medium risk, medium time. PMI is plus minus interesting. What was positive about today's lecture, what was negative, and what's interesting? Put it in a discussion forum and have students debate what were the pluses, what were the minuses, what were the interesting. And it's important to put interesting in because students too often will not put pluses. We train them so well in high school to be negative, they'll put all the positive things in the interesting column, and you have to actually point out that they actually got something positive from your lecture. But you put that in there, okay? KWL, same kind of thing. What did you know about this topic already? What do you still want to know? And what did you learn from the class? KWHL, the H stands for how will we learn something. You give them a KWL in an online discussion forum, and they compare what they've learned from that class to what other students have learned. They compare what they want to learn to what other students want to learn. They compare how they will learn to other students and how they will learn. It's nice to put them in online discussion forums. Cool resource providers. This one my students like. I also have technology finder ideas, where if anyone finds a technology and demonstrates it in my class, they can cross off one of the assignments for that class. Okay? I learn about new technologies, they learn about new technologies, and they enhance my class, and I can use them next time. I also have cool resource finders. Well, they'll find simulations on the internet, they'll find interesting things, and they'll show them for the first 5 minutes of class and post them up to the course website. It's a good way to use technology and blend in a face-to-face class. You can also do it in a fully online class. Library Day. Halfway through a couple of my classes, I have Library Day. I hadn't done it in a couple of years, and I did it last semester, and it worked great, so well that I'll recommend it to you. Every semester, I assign 5 articles a week to read, and they have to pick 3. And in the middle of the semester, or the end of the semester, I have 2 weeks I call Library Day, or a day I call Library Day, where they have to go to the library, online, maybe, or physical, and find 20, 30 articles and summarize them in a day. Spend only a day, a full day, what they normally would spend reading my 3 to 5 articles, but they find the articles that they want, 20 articles, 30 articles. They read more in that 1 week or 2 weeks than they do often all semester. They love it because they get control over the content. I still control most of the content. I give them a week to control. They then turn that library day into final projects, final assignments. They put their reviews, their summaries on the internet, and they have peer critiques, for instance. They put their summaries up, and other people then can find those links. They put their links up and reflect on them. Jigsaw, I assign my students online. Well, I meet them the first day of class, and I meet them the last day. And in the middle, they're in jigsaw groups, where I have person number one reads chapters one and two of a book, person number two reads three and four, person number three reads five and six, and so forth and so on. All the people who read chapters one and two go to a discussion forum and summarize chapters one and two in a base group. Then they come back to their home group and summarize the book to each other and create a final presentation. They come back to class during week 15, and each group has a separate presentation on the book. Every student was responsible for two chapters of that book. I've had students who've come to class in December who've gotten in car accidents, gotten to their roommate's car, gotten in a car accident, and still came to campus to do their final presentations because they have a role. They have a responsibility for that learning. It's important to do that responsive individual accountability for one's learning. Jigsaw's one way. Pruning the tree. I do pruning the tree with video conferencing, where I have students guess the concept that's in my head. I'll say, I'm thinking of the Center for the Study of Math, and they'll say, is it west of the Mississippi, east of the Mississippi? Once they guess, they're out of the competition, but it's a great way for getting all the people at the road sites involved, and that's good for concept attainment. So I'll say, I teach creative thinking. I'm thinking of a creative writing technique, and they'll have to guess what it is. So we prune the tree down and down to narrow it in. It's a low cost, medium risk, low time activity. 99 second quotes. I put my 99 second counter up on the screen, and every student brings in a quote from the book that they all read or an article they've read, and they get 99 seconds to explain why they like their quote. You can also do it in a synchronous chat where you give everyone 99 seconds in a chat session. This way, if you have 15 students in a grad course, 25 students, they all get their 99 seconds of fame. They all get a voice, and you can summarize then what they've learned at the end of that. It's a low-cost, medium-risk, medium-time activity. Six hats. Edward de Bono costs $30,000 for Keynote to tell you about this one method. So I'm just going to tell you about it here, and you can read his books instead. He has methods where you wear different color hats. He gets engineers and accountants, being a former accountant, I find this kind of ludicrous, but he says, I can get him to be more creative over the weekend. I know nobody in accounting is creative. But sorry if anyone teaches accounting. Now, the white hat is the factual hat, the red hat's the emotional hat, the yellow hat is positive and sunshine, the black hat's the gloomy hat, so we don't want to make the accountant, don't give the accountant the black hat. Green hats, new choice and creativity. Blue hat controls the thinking. You give people different color hats, and you can do this online. So you can get people out of their normal mindset. Get them out of, I think John Nesbitt has a new book, The Megatrends Guy, called Mindsets. Get them out of their mindsets. Structured controversy. Get two students on one side of a point of view, two students on the other side, and have them debate. My school psych colleague at Indiana had all these debates set up in an online forum called Alta Vista back in the old days. He said it worked great. We had two students pro and two con, and then they had to give feedback on other groups and what their solutions were, so they learned from other groups' debates, and at the end they come to compromise. Numbered heads together. Again, this works with video conferencing, where every student is numbered, and they're in groups. Group one, number one. Group two, number two. Group three, number three. Group four, number four. Group two, number one, group two, and I'll call on all the number ones from all the remote sites to respond. That way there can't be any sleepers at the remote video sites. Now, I often will assign them to be in different names from Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, all the happy, sleepy, doc, dopey group. I'll go, dopey, number four, could you give us your answer? We can cover more content with this technique because what I do is I assign everybody a piece of an article to critique. I'll give all the number ones the results section, all the number twos the introduction section of an article, all the number threes the method, and we'll do our research methods class and summarize seven articles in a span of 15 minutes. And everybody's picking out a piece of the article and critiquing it. And we're finding out flaws in articles. Instead of covering less content through collaborative learning, we cover more content through collaborative learning. But numbered heads together keeps the slacker, sluff, slugs, and surfer dudes involved. And, you know, I'll come back to that point. Best three activity. We started doing this yesterday a little bit. I had to turn to someone. What were the top three things that you learned? What I often will do is I'll have students, again, at the remote site. You've got your top three. You share it with someone next to you, and together you got to come up with three. So you have to synthesize across both your threes. And then they work with another group who had to synthesize, and now four of you come up to the top three. Now you really start summarizing the content. Again, this works great for video conference. It can work well in an online discussion forum. Human graphs, this one works wonderful in video conferencing where you have students line up. All the people who think the book we just read is awful, you're number one. People who think the book was great, you're tens. And you have them line up on a scale of 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 in front of each other so you can see all the number ones, all the number twos, and all the number threes. And we find out that students in the urban community in Indianapolis have different opinions from the students who are in Bloomington, sort of like Columbia and St. Louis. We find out that the practitioners really love the book and the grad students who are off there in La La Land hated the book, or vice versa. Okay? It's a good eye-opening, kicks them in the seat of the pants, whacks them in the side of the head. Scavenger hunts. I mentioned this morning. Having students find resources on the web that they're later going to use in the class. Have this as an opening activity, or first week, second week, in an online class where they use the contents, they find the contents, and they share what they've learned. Low cost, low risk, medium time. So those are 15 learner-centered strategies. I'm going to get more technology ones here in a second. I want you to turn to someone for 99 seconds and share the solid ideas and the fuzzy ideas you just got. Okay? Sorry, train. Okay, who got a solid idea? Anybody have a solid? Anything they can use? What can you use?
99-second
books. Okay, have a basketball. Anyone else? Yeah.
Movie clips.
Sorry. Okay, yes. Open source courseware. Very good. Anyone else? Kagan structures of learning, great. Spencer Kagan's all about structures. These are structures. Excellent insight. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Anyone else?
Jigsaw
you can use. Where would he teach?
Well, I'm teaching in the education department, but students are studying music.
Excellent. So they can be, yeah, exactly. I have a hand up over here.
Library day.
What do you teach?
Counseling courses.
Oh, yeah, that would work real well. There you go. Have a stop. Well, actually, it's a paperweight. Okay, yes. Cool resource provider. Who said
yeah,
that? Yes.
One more, bigger candy.
Yeah.
Probably the money's point, 1 minute papers, basically it works anywhere, not even in the classroom environment, but also at any workshop, etc.
Any workshop.
Together and make people
work. Yes, just like right now. Very good. Okay. All right. Let me go back to where we were. Now we're at negative one. And I'll pause that. Okay.
Is that on PowerPoint,
The counter? The counter, tiagi.com, T-H-I-A-G-I. There's different counters. Just go to Google and type in counters, but Tiagi has the most... His name is Silver Salon Tejarajaran, so he goes by Tiagi. He's the most creative person in the world. He comes up with one new simulation a day. This 2 miles from my house. This website, tiagi.com, is one of the most fun and websites to go to. Mutual motivation, part two. As I mentioned this morning, Tiagi, T-H-I-A-G-I.com. T-H-I-A-G-I. You can get the timer. I mentioned that we studied online learning and did a series of studies. We found that in studying online learning, 200 and some experts in higher ed said that you can't do Socratic questioning, you can't do modeling, you can't do lecturing. What happens online is group problem solving, problem-based learning, discussion, case learning, simulation, student-generated content, coaching, guided learning, and exploration. In our studies, about 10% of online learning is lecture-based. We're shifting. We still need lectures. I believe in lectures, as I mentioned yesterday, but more types of learning are possible. So let's take a look at the types of learning, more student engagement in learning. I'm going to link to these 10 motivational principles. If you flip your handout page, it says, can you use? No way, maybe, and definitely. If you want to write down some of these strategies you can use, might use, and definitely would use. Icebreakers were mentioned this morning. Having students do interviews of each other online or face-to-face and share them. Have them commit to something. You're less likely to have students drop your class if they've committed to doing something in the class and made it permanent on the website for everyone to read. Adult students don't want to be embarrassed. If they've posted they're going to do well in this class, they're going to be less likely to drop. It's important to build those commitments up because you also find out what interests the students. You find out what their goals are so you can structure the content for them. Eight nouns activity. Everybody in my class describes themselves with eight nouns. I'm a pirate. I'm a music lover. A student will say, I like Dave Matthews Band. And another student will reply to them and say, hey, there's a 24-hour Dave Matthews Band station. Or I'm a dishwasher. We can do all sorts of fun things when we find out a student loves washing dishes. But and one male student said he likes to sew online. Now, I don't think male students the first day of a face-to-face class would admit to liking to sew or washing dishes. But online, students are very frank. They tell you stuff they don't tell you face-to-face. Sometimes they don't want to know. Anyways, eight nouns. But not only post your eight nouns, but what you have in common with each other. Coffee house expectations. What do you expect out of this class? And then you as an instructor can point out how you're going to meet those expectations and when. You might not get to the concept that Ta wants to learn about, his interest for his dissertation. You might not get to it until week 9. You can tell him right away in week 1, we'll get to it in week 9. Let his tension come down so he's not so nervous that this class doesn't affect me. He knows we're going to get to his topic later on. Scavenger hunts I mentioned. But how about a scavenger hunt within Facebook or MySpace where they have to find their other colleagues in the class, their peers in the class? That would be a fun one. I haven't tried this one yet. I just thought about this one, but social networking software is growing. MySpace is growing, Facebook. Self-testing, feedback. At Indiana, we have a program for chemistry students called CALM, because they get nervous when they take chemistry classes, computer-assisted learning method. They can self-test themselves in CALM on chemistry. So they go here before their exams. But it's not just for college students. We've now made it available for high school students throughout the state of Indiana. They can go to the CALM approach. And other disciplines, physics and other places, can use the CALM, and it's not just for Indiana. You could use CALM. They're making it available for anyone if you teach chemistry or physics or others. Feedback. I have a technique called critical friends. Everybody in class is a critical friend who gives them feedback on their work or an email pal, because students want feedback on everything they do online and you cannot physically provide it. You will die. Students want feedback on everything. If all of you posted in an online forum, you would all expect me to give you feedback, and there's no way I can provide it. Here I gave 8 of you feedback so far. Okay, face-to-face, you only give a few people feedback, but you all responded to each other here. That's what you can do online with critical friends, web buddies, email pals. So everybody in my class has one. We might meet face-to-face the first week and line up, as I mentioned this morning, non-verbally. The most confident person meets the least confident person, and they become email pals. Web-supported reading. Everybody critiques 3 or 4 articles, but also posts reactions to their peers' critiques of articles. Always, for every post you post, have them post feedback to a peer. Make that part of your class policy, okay? That way you build in peer feedback, or double it. For every post you do, you have to do 2 peer feedbacks, okay? And then maybe summarize the peer feedback. Clickers, we already talked about clickers. I did something with Toronto, York University last year, where I presented from Indiana, and the people at York posted and clicked their clicker. I remote accessed their desktop, put up the graph of their clicker from Indiana, and sent it back to them over video conference. It worked. So Clicker is not just for a classroom. It can be used for video conferencing, interestingly enough. Brainstorm chat. Having students go to WebCT or Blackboard and chat about things, brainstorm ideas, summarize ideas in the brainstorm. Okay, just open up a discussion forum, a chat. Data analysis. Jean Sepp teaches archaeology, and she has her students go to a time web tool where they go back in time in Africa and analyze and do digs within rural parts of Africa. And they dig up old bones and so forth. You can go to all these Mayan ruin websites and take a look at things in three-dimensional views. Go to museums and so forth. Go to Palenque and other places. Multiple topics. Instead of assigning all my students 4 assignments, they all have to do these 4 assignments, as I mentioned yesterday, I give them 10. Instead of all assigning 1 discussion forum, I have a discussion forum for those that want to work in corporate, those that want to work in government, those that want to work in higher ed, and they can pick the track that they want to go to, pick which 4 of 10 assignments they want to do, instead of requiring them all to do the same thing. Start a wrapper. Everybody starts discussion once a semester. Everybody wraps a discussion once a semester. The starter role is more important than the wrapper role, according to our research. Now we've moved to make the starter the wrapper or the moderator for the whole week. So the starter reads ahead, summarizes, and in effect lectures to everybody else, and the wrapper summarizes what happened. TARS, thinking about the readings. I have a professor in journalism who has his students reflect on the assignments and post them online, and he gives them feedback before class. He has 100 students in his photojournalism class. He's a good writer. He can do that. I couldn't do that. It's too much work. But he likes doing this assignment, thinking about the readings before class starts. It's warm-up activities, just-in-time teaching, as I mentioned this morning. Games online, Jeopardy games, Quiz Bowl games. Some of these things are free. Hangman games, Wheel of Fortune games. Seance. I have online seances of long-since-dead psychologists. We meet online after dark, kind of new age stuff. I did this face-to-face for a while, but there's a story. I don't have enough time to tell you the story about why I stopped. Well, I started getting these letters from my students about the seance was the best thing that ever happened in my class, so I started doing an online round table, if you want to call it that. It's high risk if you call it a seance. And they have to read old books from Dewey and Wundt and Skinner and Pavlov and cite quotes out of them and solve problems of today in Missouri schools or whatever based on these old books. They have a seance. Online personality of roles. I enter into WebCT and Blackboard 28 different roles and people. I have Mahatma Gandhi, Aristotle, Mother Teresa, Sir Edmund Hillary, Anna Freud, whomever, and they play on these roles. Attila the Hun is the bloodletter role. The most important role is the devil's advocate, negative hat, because students are too nice to one another online. So having a bloodletter watchdog is very important. So here we're doing some online role play activities. I enter in scholars. Everybody whose article we've read in the class, I enter into WebCT or Blackboard as a student. I enroll everybody whose article, and students the last 2 weeks become that person. We do online scholarly role play. But they want to be Bonk, or the really fast Bonk, or the really, 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 no, or Piaget, or the real Piaget, or whatever. Panels of experts, symposium online, press conferences, court forums. We have a law, business law professor who has students become the plaintiffs, the judge, and the defendants, and they enter their briefs online and do debates. Video papers, juxtaposing a video against the paper. So dual coding theory again. There's a free tool called the Video Paper Builder, from originally built by the Concord Consortium or somebody out, yeah, Concord, vpb.concord. Just type Video Paper Builder, and you can have PowerPoints juxtaposed against video, digital video. So if you're doing authentic research, you can write your paper and have your data, your research against that, your video of the research. Okay, second part is done. Third part will be real short. Turn to someone next to you again. And for another 99 seconds, we'll restart this. What did you just learn from that last section? What can you use, what can't you use, and so forth.
Now for something completely different.
Okay.
Obi-Wan.
All right. Now.
Looks like that one does the same thing.
Oh, Jedi here.
is going to be hard. All right. I do want to just briefly, we have about 3 minutes to go through my new book on learning styles. It's called The Web of Learning. And if you're interested, it ties into a lot of different learning style inventories, including the VARC model, and you can read about that, including the COBE model of learning styles. And I'll skip over some of that. There are different questions you can take a look at. There's a free questionnaire, by the way, from North Carolina. This does kind of... Oh, yeah. There is a free questionnaire online from people in North Carolina on learning styles that's an index there. We found that our method was linked to the COBE method of finding information, reading, reflecting on the content, displaying what you know, and then doing something with it. Okay? And so we call it the R2-D2 method. Read, reflect, display, and do. I've been doing the R2-D2 method for about 10 years and didn't realize it spelled R2-D2 till a year ago. And so we've now put it into a book. We actually have Jedi Knight kinds of things going on in our classes.
Is a princess and a guy like me?
You will skip over a few of these here. So auditory learners. I have something called the online resource libraries. Instead of blogs, I have them do reflections on articles online. They all blog on 10 articles, 20 articles in Blackboard in a discussion thread. They all have their own name in Blackboard in an online discussion thread. So they summarize their articles and they have a critical friend giving them feedback. Audio dramas, instead of getting a text case, an audio case. You hear the case with actors and actresses. Online tutorials and help, auditory learners. So part one is auditory learners, reading learners. Synchronous conferencing. I'll skip over a few of these jokes here. Web quests. Online explorations on the internet, a web quest. Reflective learners. Putting model answers up. Our business law professor puts example answers on the internet for reflective learners. Chat transcripts. Instead of having just an online chat, put the transcript up to reflect on it and have reflect, because only 7 or 8 students show up for the chat. If you post the archive, you can have all sorts of activities on the chat transcript. I'm going to skip over the math emporium. Basically learning in a shop math in a shopping mall. Portfolios. Putting up your portfolios for reflection. So students can put up their work and you can reflect on what was effective. Putting up video contents for reflection activities. Having an asynchronous discussion for the week with experts coming in at the end of the asynchronous discussion. So combining async and sync together, bringing in the people whose chapters you're reading for a synchronous chat. After they've bashed their articles all week, we bring them in for a synchronous, they find out they agree with most of the things they had to say. That one article doesn't represent a person and that people's ideas change over time. It's a powerful thing.
Pick up your
visual learners.
I can't see it.
Okay, thank you, Luke. Online anatomy. We've now got, online anatomy cases from the University of Leicester online and many other places where you can look at autopsies, virtual autopsies online. You can look at video clips of famous people of different fields, in this case, the field of DNA. You can look at animation sequences. Virtual field trips online. Here's a place you might not go to, the South Pole. There's a virtual field trip on the internet.
Houston, we have a problem.
Flash animations of the Enron crisis. Powerful stuff, as I mentioned this morning. Flash animations of chi-square analysis or randomization of groups or cash flow. Visual learners, Flash is wonderful for them. To show experiments that are being done in different places, chemistry and biology experiments being done at the North or South Pole. Visual learning. Showing how tornadoes are formed. Important here in St. Louis. I was stuck in one here a couple of years ago during Memorial Day weekend. Video contents. Having students find and create, respond to video on the internet. Powerful for visual learners. Libraries with pictures. Lots of free contents for visual learners. Music online.
Play as time goes by.
theater online, online fashion shows, stuff I never thought was possible. I'm going to skip over art and design on the internet, but this one is out of New South Wales, where they have experts giving commentary online. Here's some experts giving commentary on the art and designs that they find on the internet. Skip over this. Skip over online. This is online ultrasound training. I'm going to skip over this. I'm going to skip over online surgery. For the sake of time, I'm just going to skip. Sorry. Fourth one, tactile learners.
I've got a bad feeling about this. Tactile learning.
Having cash flow analyses again, chemistry experiments, statistics courses online. Tutoring. These students here are tutoring using sign language. They were taught sign language. Now they're tutoring high school kids in their lessons online, practicing their sign language. Online museums and exhibits on the internet. There's a new website called discoverbabylon.com where you can look at Egypt and Mesopotamia and other places. And online storytelling. This one, professor I work with, has his students create a website on intelligence, and every semester the students keep building the website. So they're learning about human intelligence by contacting people famous in the field. And Skipper is a K-12 example. Online poetry project. These students here post online poetry and connections and links to other. So they're doing a hypermedia kind of project online. So they learn about poetry and the connections of one author to another author, one poet to another poet. And that's about it. I'm going to skip over this one here.
How did you do that?
And just point out the next
like they do.
Technique we're working on is called the Matrix. For mobile, auditory, thought stimulating, reflective, real world, visually interactive, and extremely hands-on learning.
The force will be with you. Always.
That's the R2-D2 method. Read, reflect, display, and do. If you're interested in reading a chapter or two and giving me feedback, send me questions. We're putting 100 strategies for how to do this. So 25 reading strategies, 25 reflective, 25 visual, and 25 hands-on. So I'm happy to share a chapter with you. Thank you for letting me come here.